Imagine a life where you can spend according to your values, give generously, love richly, live intentionally, and handle your finances biblically. That's what the Faith and Finance podcast is all about. I'm your host, Adrienne Hildebrand, and on the Faith and Finance podcast, we discuss personal finance, intentional living, and value-aligned spending by sharing inspiring stories and practical topics to help you steward your finances in a way that honors God and builds your faith and wealth for the present and generations to come. Let's get started. Hey, friend, welcome back to the Faith and Finance podcast. I'm your host, Adrienne Hildebrand, and I am so pumped that you are here with me today. So I know many of us are going through some crazy times right now, but the great news is that we're all in this together. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. We're all in this together. And I actually recorded this interview with today's guest, Tanya Brown, many months ago. And who knew that some of the things that we would be talking about would be so encouraging for you today and for all of us. And not just that, just talking about how our finances relate to us all the time, right? Not just in crisis, but also I love this episode because Tanya talks a lot about finding your why, which is the title of today's episode, and your superpowers, and obviously not like real superpowers, but finding your superpower. And she talks a lot about the behavior around finances, which is exactly the things that I talk about. And you're going to just love Tanya and hearing her heart today. So a little bit about Tanya. So she grew up broke and she never heard of savings. These are her words. And she joined the army and went nuts, she says. She quickly racked up debt, but she ended up paying it off. So she got married and they were still on the same page with money, but they were not on the same page with money. But later they made bad business decisions and they coupled that with the recession in 2008, which again is a reason why I think it's cool that Tanya is on the show today, because she told me yesterday actually that she's been through three recessions now. And so she's just really encouraging. But she said that they were in over $100,000 in debt, their marriage was on the rocks, and she was pregnant. So they started working as a team. They started with Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University, and they ended up teaching a bunch of people Financial Peace University, which is really cool. But Tanya's background is actually a certified financial planner, but she ended up wanting to coach because she started her business and had this passion for coaching called the Financial X Factor, which she's going to talk a little bit about that. But she has the vision to equip women with a financial life plan connected to their values so they can pursue their passion. She doesn't just talk about women today, though. So for any dudes that are listening, she shares some really practical tips and also just some straight up encouragement. She's now a foster parent, and she just has an incredible story. So I'm so glad that Tanya is on the show today. I also wanted to let you guys know that I am taking on more one-on-one coaching clients. For those of you that have been with me for a little while, you know that I have been iterating and figuring out what works and what doesn't work over a period of time. And so now I am taking on more coaching clients. At the time of this recording, if you're listening in real time, that coaching package starts at $97 a month, but can go upward or lower depending on your needs. So I just want to put that out there. However, coaching is something that helps you change your behavior around money. I help you get on a value-aligned spending plan. And what that means is, you guys know I'm not about deprivation. I'm not about any of that. I'm about what do you value, and let's make a plan moving forward. That, and I'm here to motivate you, encourage you, but also coaches sometimes, you know, we also give advice and help. So if you're interested in that, please email me at adrienne@faithandfinance.org, or you can book a free discovery call on my website, faithandfinance.org. So please reach out to me if you're interested in coaching, and I'm happy to talk with you more about that. So let's get in today's episode. Hey, Tanya, welcome to the Faith and Finance podcast.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be on your show.
I am so glad that you're here. I did not mention this previously, but how we met, I really feel was a God thing, because of all the 3,000 people that were at Business Boutique at Christy Wright's Business Boutique Conference, we sat right next to each other on day one. We were both in the personal finance space, and I was like, there ain't no way. And then we just became, you know, friends through the thing, through the whole meeting. And I just love your heart. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Oh, I felt the same way. I thought, oh my gosh, I hit the jackpot when I sat next to you, and we just clicked instantly. So I agree.
Yes, we totally did. So I am so anxious for everyone to hear about you. Tanya, tell us about yourself and then kind of your money story.
Okay. So I tell people I hail from a little itty bitty tiny town called Brooklyn, New York, and did not grow up with any sense of finances, absolutely nothing. Joined the military. So like everyone else, so quite a bit people will do, joined the military, ran up my credit, and then quickly discovered just saying I don't have the money doesn't necessarily work. You do not pay your credit card bill. It goes to your commanding sergeant, and you have to stand before your sergeant and explain why you did not pay your bill, which unfortunate for me was my very first encounter with my commanding sergeant, was explaining to him why I kind of didn't really think it was important to pay my bills. So that was my very first lesson in finance. And I feel fortunate. The poor person that was my very new sergeant just got there, got me, but he made me write out a way to pay off my credit card bills. And that was the first time I actually learned that you can create a plan to get out of debt. I wish I can say I took that to heart and stayed the course, but I did not. I managed my finances, but I also managed it with debt. And I love how David Ramsey puts it, that debt magnifies anything going on in your life. It magnifies errors. It magnifies a crisis. And we got to a point where, admittedly, I made some really poor financial choices. I made bad business decisions. This was coupled with 2008. You throw all of that together in a brand new marriage, and we found ourselves in debt to the tune of over $100,000. Our marriage was on the rocks. We were at each other's throats. And what made matters worse and what felt embarrassing was I was a certified financial planner. I had all the technical knowledge, but that's when I quickly learned that money is a behavior issue. It's not a money issue. So I tucked my pride, heard about this guy, David Ramsey, and thought, I'm just going to take financial peace with my husband. That made all the difference in the world. We took the class together. I learned that a lot of what I thought about money was off, and it's really about behavior, and it's working together as a team, which up until that point, we were not working as a team. We made a lot of hard choices. We downsized everything. I drove a hoopty with the air conditioning barely worked. The radio barely worked. He drove a hoopty. He drove a 30-year-old car that I say God is the only thing that kept that car together. And we worked our way out of all of the debt. But it grew our marriage because we had to work as a team. We also worked on increasing our income, which helped out tremendously. And again, we climbed our way out of debt. I was so passionate, started doing coaching. So with being a certified financial planner, the focus is planning with disposable income. With financial coaching, it's dealing with the behavior side of finances and really moving to a place where they have more financial security, or in some cases, moving people to a place where they're able to kind of live out their passions. And the journey for me was more than money. It really was about faith. I realized in that season, my faith was out of alignment. I was saying I believe this about God, but I was acting differently. I was acting like God doesn't have the ability to make the changes in my life without debt. So I had said, you know, if this is the path I am to take, I need to trust God with my finances. I need to give to him first, because at the time I wasn't fully tithing. So even though the money was tight, we committed to tithing. We committed to just following God in all areas of our lives and just giving it to him. And to say that he just showed up in our lives and beautifully showed off. It was just the most amazing season of our life, down to when we went to get a car, we only had a certain amount of cash. And if you can believe it, they actually gave us a discount on the vehicle, which is never heard of. It was like operating our money with God magnified our journey. It strengthened our faith that He can see us through absolutely everything. And my resolve in making sure my values and my faith is aligned with how I manage my finances. And that kind of got us to where we are now. After a while, I became so passionate about this. I wanted to have a place where I can combine faith and finances and left my prior job. So now I'm a personal coach. And ultimately, it's equipping women so they can live out their, they can pursue their God-given passion. I believe women on fire with their passion can change the world. So if I can be that person to help them create a plan to go forth and live out that call on their lives, I'm just honored to be part of that journey as they change the world. So that, I guess the other part of my story, one of my passions is foster care. And I really wanted to be a hands-on mom. I already had a child. So getting out of debt got me to a place where I didn't need to work. And it got to a place where I could retire early. And for me, I just have a passion for foster care. I just believe in just, I can't imagine a child walking this earth without someone to love and nurture them and just pour into them. And I can't imagine someone older doing that. So that fueled our passion to become foster parents, and it fueled our passion to focus on older kids. So we have three teens above the age of 12 in our home, and I want to pour into them that they're not their parents' decisions, that they're not what the world tells them they are, that they have a value, they have a purpose, they're here for a reason, and I am here committed and invested in them. And that has been the most beautiful part of, honestly, getting out the finances. It wasn't saying I was debt-free, it was saying yes to all the things God had for us, including just the honor that God's blessed me with being a part of these three beautiful, beautiful girls' lives. So that is my story.
I feel like we could stop right here and just say, okay, guys, you've heard her heart. I mean, she's awesome. Tanya, you are an incredible woman. You are an incredible person. I am so thankful that I got to meet you, and now my audience gets to hear your heart and just hear parts of your story. There's so much I want to unpack there. Number one, had no idea that in the Army, that if you didn't pay your bills, you had to go before your sergeant. That's actually not a terrible idea. Like, truthfully, it's like a built-in accountability.
It is. Now that I'm older, because this was 25 years ago, I feel so bad for that guy. That poor man, his name was Sergeant Williams, the best thing that ever happened to me. It was his first day on the job as a sergeant. I was his brand new soldier. He had not even met the commanding sergeant yet. And the environment he had to meet him in was this deadbeat soldier who wasn't paying her bill. And he had to stand before them and try to explain why I wasn't paying my bill. He didn't know me, and the game plan I had to get out of it. So looking back, I feel so bad for that poor man.
No joke. I would be like, you poor innocent soul. But it's actually not a terrible idea, as I said. I mean, it's like a built-in accountability. I always talk about how I'm like one of those people that kind of need external accountability. Some people are very internally accountable to themselves. And to me, I'm like, if it's something I have to do for me, it's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to get done. But if I have an external motivator or accountability, that helps me a lot. So that's actually really awesome. But I just had to touch on that because that's incredible. But then, so I'll try to move in succession of kind of how you mentioned your story. So you were in a bunch of debt, and you talked about how your marriage, yes, you're going through some really hard stuff. And I've been there myself, especially adding financial stress on top of that is so hard. But do you mind touching a little bit more on that, sort of what you did to pay off the debt or to get on the same page with your spouse. And then of course you mentioned the, now that you guys have been through stuff, but that your marriage grew so much through that. Mm-hmm. So do you mind just touching a little bit more on that? And then I'll come back and touch some of the other things you talked about.
Sure. I wasn't living in reality. That's the best way I can put it. When we got married, and keep in mind, I was a financial advisor through all of this, so you'd think I would know better. We really didn't discuss finances, as crazy as that sounds. I knew where, I kind of knew his financial situation, but we didn't discuss the big stuff. What are our ideas about debt? We both kind of said we weren't interested in having debt, but our actions were not taking us in that direction. Who would pay off what debt? Was it his debt, my debt? Was it our debt? So I would say the mistake up front was we never sat down and discussed what our marriage money behavior was going to look like. Were we on this? Did we see the debt as one the second we got married? No, we did not. We had separate bank accounts, which I know people have different ideas about that. And we just didn't discuss finances. So again, it got to a place where I remember walking throughout the house and us discussing who was going to get what. And I just felt this little whisper in my heart from God saying, no, this isn't the plan. That no, I have a better plan for you I did not want to look my daughter in the eye and say I didn't do everything to preserve her family for her. I didn't, and more importantly, my first vow was to God. My second vow was to my husband. And I thought, if I have to honor God, I got to make this work. So we came together, but the first thing was with finances. So we merged the finances. And for us, there was a shift in that because I couldn't separate his money from my money. And that shift brought us together. The other thing was taking that financial peace class, because for the first time we had a third party. It wasn't me saying stuff. It was a third party saying stuff. If we didn't agree, having the financial peace facilitator on hand to kind of hash out some of our arguments was really great. And we had to come to a middle ground. I was the saver. He was the spender. He was very impulsive. I would have lived under a bridge. So I found gaming worked for him. And what I mean by that is, okay, if we had $50 left over in a month, 50 went towards debt, 50 he can blow. Like I had to meet him where he was, and I wasn't doing that. I also had to honor and respect him as my husband and help coach him into taking the lead in the finances, which I want to say on record, Scott, my husband, was the one who got us out the final debt. He came up with the strategy that got us out of our last $10,000. And if you would have told me that when we first met, I would have said that was impossible. So honoring his position in our family as a husband, actually including him, having him at the table, not berating him if we made a mistake, it was okay. Involving him in the finances and not letting him get away with, oh, just do what you want. Taking a hard look at the numbers for us, we had to do a detailed budget and we had to make some big cuts. We actually sold the house we were in because honestly, it wasn't affordable to begin with. We moved into an apartment. We stuck to David Ramsey. We stuck to no more than 25% of our take-home income. We cut out everything. We did not have cable. We did not see the inside of a restaurant. We did not, I think we had flip phones for a while. Everything was secondhand. Luckily, the kids were a little bit younger, so they really don't care. When he started to see the momentum with the finances, that just got him on fire. So recognizing for him, he felt so defeated by never being able to climb out of the finances that he felt like, why bother? So starting with that lowest balance, it was like once we got over that hump, he was like, oh, I think we can do this. And then we got over the next hump. But again, you're going to make mistakes along the way. And I made a commitment. I was not going to be negative through that. It was, okay, this happened, let's move on. And that, he said that helped build him up as a man, one, and it gave him the confidence. And I noticed he started to make more money decisions, but just pushing back when, if you're the one who leads in finances, pushing back and just saying, look, I really want your input. No, honey, you got, nope. I really value you as a husband. I value you as a person. I really want this input. Also having that why. Even back then, we knew we wanted to foster. We knew we wanted a home. So every time we got tempted, we went back to the, okay, is this major vacation we're thinking of going to be able to allow us to pay off our debts? And is it going to be able to allow us to be able to take in foster kids and live the way we want to live? And if the answer was no, that decision went by the wayside. And it was those little day-by-day decisions, not getting to Starbucks here, not paying $5 for lunch here, it really wasn't the big stuff. That compounded over time is what got us out of debt.
I love so many parts of what you just said. Number one, that you allowed Scott to, not allowed, but I guess, allowed him to take the lead, really, mm-hmm. in the thing, even though you were more of the initial one that was kind of like pushing for this. I know it was a group effort, but what I'm trying to say is that, you know, sometimes I'm a very independent person. I'm married, but I'm very independent, very aggressive sometimes in my goals and how I want things to be done because I put so much time and effort into things. Whereas sometimes I don't allow my husband to sort of take the lead, especially with finances, even though, I mean, I do the budget and most of those things, but allowing him to kind of have that say is really, really important. So that was convicting just now, even though it's something I already knew, just, and I'm just real in this podcast. So just allowing Kyle to be more interactive in the budget, even if he doesn't really like want to, mm-hmm. you know, he's like, yeah, it's fine, Adrian, but still allowing him to have more of a say and be involved more. So that's so good. But also I always talk about the end goal. Like, what is the end mm-hmm. goal in mind here? And your end goal at that point in your life was, number one, we want to get out of debt. So we're willing mm-hmm. to do literally whatever it takes to do that. But then also the end goal was eventually we want to be foster parents.
Yeah.
And so that you both were on the same page about these are our end goals. So yes, we're willing to make those sacrifices right now in order for greater gain later. Because I know some people say just getting rid of lattes isn't going to make you rich. But if your goal is to get out of debt, that, like you said, those $5 and $10 things mm-hmm. add up so yep. quickly. Just taking an objective look at those things and saying, what is my goal here? What is it that we are trying to do? So I love that so much. Goal planning, you know, with your spouse, being on the same page, because mm-hmm. the process could have looked a little different, yes. but the goal was still the same, right? So the method, I guess, might have looked different to other people, but your goal was the same. And that's why you guys were able to stay on track. So before I touch more on the foster care thing, because that's so awesome. Earlier, you mentioned that coaching, which I think this is like, should be the definition of the difference between financial coaching and financial advising. So you said coaching deals with the behavior, whereas financial planning deals with the disposable income. Yep. And it's so true, because if you don't have, and I always say that too, Tanya, I think I probably mentioned it to you. It's like, I want to make sure people have an educated conversation with an advisor when they go in, and also that they do have disposable income that they're going to be able to use for investing and, or, you know, extra investing or whatever it is they're trying to do as far as like big plans, you know. So that was an incredible way to put that. I'm like, seriously, like, this is going to have to be the new definition for coaching versus advising. So can you talk a little bit about sort of that transition? You touched on it previously, but a little bit about that transition between being an advisor and then now being a coach, and sort of what that looked like in your life, sort of what prompted that. I know you touched on it, but just a little bit of a deep dive there.
Sure. And actually it was three. It was financial advising to financial planning to financial coaching. Believe not, to me, they were very different transitions. So financial advising was really all about investing for me when I initially started. So it was the person came in, disposable income. And I always say financial advising, even planning, is math. It's a science. It's here are the problems and here are the solutions and the fit. That's pretty much it. But after my own journey, I started to realize there's so much more to finances that if I'm talking to someone and we're creating a financial, let's say we're creating a financial plan for their estate. Well, how does this plan affect the purpose that God created them for? How does this affect their marriage? Like even getting out of debt, when I talk to people, God does not contradict. So God is not going to tell you, get out of debt, but that you're going to sacrifice your family and your time. There's got to be a balance between the two. Coaching to me is behavior, but it goes deeper. If you're a coach in any way, you're touching on lives. So it's how do you do this, but still keep the other important areas aligned? I don't remember really discussing marriage or family or vacation or digging deep into understanding someone's core values and then making sure those core values are aligned with how they're doing their planning. That's where I feel the beauty of coaching. And I always say coaching is an art because you are, and someone has the answers within. So you are coaching someone through a series of questions as a guide to help them uncover their deep values and help them create a plan based on who they are to align their behavior with their deepest goals, their wishes, where God's trying to take them. And that's kind of how I see the delineation. It's far more behavior focused and you definitely encompass more areas of someone's life. Whereas planning, you just look at the numbers. You may ask an occasional question, but with coaching, you're really digging because you want the whole person to be healthy. You want the whole person to be well. So that's kind of how I break it down. And again, my own journey. When I realized how different our marriage was after we got out of debt, I realized it's working with a couple to strengthen their marriage through how they talk to each other with finances. It's uncovering why someone is getting out of debt. Is it to pursue their passion to travel? To pursue their passion to perhaps be a stay-at-home mom so they can foster or take care of their children, or to retire so they can work in a nonprofit where they are really giving back even though they're not getting paid for it. Also, coaching is accountability. There's really not a lot of accountability in advising and planning. So for that person who wants that accountability, for that person who wants true behavior change, that true alignment, someone who's going to look at all areas of their life, that's the beauty of coaching. So that's kind of how I break it down in a very long-winded way, I would say. I try to shorten it a little bit.
No, I love it. That's so, yes, just all the yes is what I want to say there. So thank you so much for explaining that further and sharing that with the audience today. So one of the coolest things about your story, you have an incredible story and just your faith and everything through this, is your desire to help women specifically to be able to make, you know, better financial decisions, whatever that looks like for them. Your mission statement, you know it better than I do, but I know you want to help women. And so talk a little bit about that and your desire, where that desire really came from. And I know, again, you mentioned it, but I just want to dive a little deeper onto each thing that you mentioned. So talk a little bit about your passion for that. And then last but not least, you can go into talking about foster care and your passion for that.
Sure. My passion, I truly believe that God gifted everyone with a purpose only they can fulfill. That there is not a soul on this planet that have that person's unique story blended with their unique personality. And they are created to solve a problem for a particular section of people. So I want to change the world, but I can't do it by myself. So if I can find those women who are like, I'm ready to pursue this, but I need direction. I'm like, let's get you some direction so you can get out there. Lord knows we need you to change the world. So that my passion is just, I get so passionate seeing women on fire. Let me tell you, during the Olympics, I'm like bawling the whole time because it is a beautiful thing to watch someone work in their gifting, whether it's swimming or a soup kitchen or track and field or being a teacher. I just get so choked up and excited when I see someone working and how they were gifted and created to work. So I just love that. So to me, just to have the honor of having that leg on a journey to help make sure that financially what they are doing is aligned with their values so they can pursue their passion, and what their behavior is not, is pulling them to rather towards their goal instead of away from it. I just get so giddy. It's just weird. I get so giddy and I get so excited, and every passion has equal value. So someone's like, I had one woman, she was over 40, teen kids, and she's like, you know, I really want to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm like, let's do this. And she was like, should I really? And I said, to me, there is no more important, I can't think of a more important season in life to be present and active for your kids than when they're about to get out the house. I told her, there's as much value to that as anything else. I had one woman who wanted to start her own business because she felt passionate about what her services can deliver to people. They're equally important to me. And so I think that's where my passion gets fueled from. And I will say I have a particular heart for women over 40 because I feel like we fall off of a relevancy train at the age of 40. If you notice, there's no movers and shakers over 40. I mean, at the rate we're going to be movers and shakers under 10. Because every time I look, it's like movers and shakers under 40, then under 30, then under 20. Again, at the rate we're going, they'll be like newborns. And like, okay, what's your goals? What you doing? So and then you're so beaten up at 40. I mean, between, if you're around my age, I'm in my late 40s, you survived the Great Recession, you've had some bumps in the road, you've probably had some health scares, some marriage issues. So, and at times you feel like there's no value you have in the world. So I don't care if they decide they don't even want to work with me. If I can just get it in their head, you have a purpose, you have a value, you have a voice that no one else has but you. And there are people God created for you to solve a problem for in a way you can only solve. And I instill this in all my foster kids. I was talking to one of them and I said, what are you gonna do with your superpower? And she's like, what superpower? I told her, I can talk to a foster child and tell them they have value and they have purpose. And yes, they will listen to me. But when my foster child becomes an adult, can you imagine the power of her voice speaking into foster children because she's been there? Can you imagine the power she's going to have to change lives, the power she's going to have over those foster kids because she is speaking from a place and in a language I can't speak because she's been there? And it was interesting. She was silent for a while and she was in the car and she finally said, I never really thought about it that way. I think I want to do blah, blah, blah. But it gave her a new avenue. So I'm just so on fire and passionate and just, I get so excited just to see women walking out in their passion. So that is why I do what I do and I'm passionate about what I do.
I love that you said you're reframing the question. So a lot of times we look at our struggle and things that we've been through as, oh, that was a learning moment for me. But you're framing it as, no, that's your superpower.
It is.
You're going to be able to connect with people. All of us have struggles. All of us have a thing that we've been through. And I truly believe, Tanya, that that is why I do what I do now with the Faith and Finance podcast, because I've been through stuff. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm on the other side. I mean, I'm still going through. I talk about my struggles still, but I'm saying, you know, with our debt on a low income and then, you know, just all these things. Mm-hmm. But that is part of my superpower now. And so people ask me, is there anything you would have changed about, you know, your time before you got into debt and or being in debt? And I was like, well, of course, but I'm like, you know what? No, Tanya, because I wouldn't have found kind of what my superpower is. I wouldn't have found something worth talking about, you know, other than, of course, God. He's always worth talking about, but the work that God has done in me in a very real way. So thank you for framing it that way, because it's so true. Like, if anybody gets anything from this, and I'm sure people are loving this right now, but if anyone gets anything from this, reframe and say, what have I been through? What do I know? What have I experienced to that, like, that can minister to someone else, solve a problem, whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. What is my superpower? I love that, Tanya. That's so great. And just that you are instilling this in your girls.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you have such a beautiful heart. And I know everyone can hear that now. So talk a little bit now. I know you've touched on your girls. Those are your, you've touched on the topic of your girls, and that's your bread and butter. That's what you love. And you love
sweethearts.
Yes. It's your mission and it's your mm-hmm. goal in life. So talk a little bit about that. And then even to the extent of what are you teaching them, not just about, you know, their purpose, but tactically, maybe what are you teaching them about finances that maybe some of us could use tactically, whether or not we're foster children or have foster children or whatever, how can we use some of the things that you're teaching these girls tactically in our own lives?
Okay. So you know, I always say God has a sense of humor. I had some health issues when I was in my early 20s. So I was told children would be difficult. So I think that's, and I had had an interest even when I was younger in possible adoption. So that heart never left even when I found out I was pregnant. So initially it was, believe me, it was adoption. It wasn't even foster care. And one of my close friends, they were in a Bible study, and he got really involved in sex trafficking. And if you can tell, I am so passionate about people just stepping into who God created them to be. And when you think about sex trafficking, to take this beautiful creation of God with this purpose and this mission, and to make her into this thing for just something God did not intend, broke my heart. So we instantly just started learning more about that. And I very quickly learned that over 60% of children of people involved in sex trafficking were in a foster care system. And then when I started digging, in some cases, the average girl entering sex trafficking in the world was 12. That's when the bug hit. I thought, what can I do? I can't sit on the sidelines. I can't see this anymore. I can't hear about it anymore. If I'm going to start crying to talk about it and not do anything. And I thought, you know what? I can't save everyone, but that girl that comes into this house, she will know she is loved. She will know she has a purpose. She will know she was created for more, and she will know she is not her parents' decisions or poor decisions, and she is not what this culture tries to tell her she is as a teenager. I get so angry when I hear people say, well, foster kids are this, foster kids are that. You get abandoned by your parents. You get tossed around from person to person. What kind of person would you be? The very fact they are at least trying and making an attempt to go to school, I get so inspired by them. So that's kind of where the bug hit, that what can I do? And I feel like there's this period of vulnerability at 12, and also almost this fork in the road. If they can have that person intervene, that is a sex trafficker. And I will tell you, a lot of times, even when I speak to kids who aren't in foster care, they will tell me stuff about people online, and I know it's a sex trafficker. But they have parents prayerfully who are monitoring them on the internet who can intervene. But when I hear this, I can step in and say, hey, let's talk about this. He's 22 years old. You're 12. There's something wrong here. So I can kind of step into that place. Also, I can pray over them. I can tell them about this God that thinks they're precious and beautiful, that they are not an accident, that they are here for a purpose, of being able to just speak the gospel into them and into their lives and give them that encouragement that they can do so much more than perhaps what they were even told to do. I think that fueled a lot of my passion. And then some of this verbiage I heard about these teens, they're troublemakers, they got issues. I don't know, can I really influence someone that age? I'm like, yes, there is no greater period of time where you can influence them if you catch them at that age. You're catching them as they are starting to be able to make mistakes they cannot back away from. So I think all of that combined fueled my passion. And that's kind of when we flipped from adoption to foster care. So we actually made a flip in there. And I thought, for whatever season God has blessed me with the opportunity to have these precious souls in my house, if they leave with anything, I want them to feel loved. I want them to feel like someone has their back. I want them to feel like they have a purpose. They were not an accident. And again, they are not their parents' mistakes. And as I poured to my girls, that making bad choices do not make you a bad person. So kind of start with that. And then the money conversations, helping them to understand that a lot of times if you talk to them, well, I don't like rich people. I'm like, well, tell me a little bit more. Well, money's bad. If they grew up poor, if they grew up, and a lot of them did, if they grew up where money was something that was talked about because of a lack, a lot of times they have a really bad opinion about money. So just teaching them about what the Bible has to say about money. And I always tell them, nothing is wrong with money. It's what you do with it. Even one of my girls who wants to get a job, I'm like, okay, come up with a financial plan and I will give her credit. She came up with a financial plan. She'll save half her money and we'll plan a budget for the others. So I don't care if it's $50 a week. Give them a plan, have them open up a savings account for half, have them have a plan for half and have some fun money. Help them to understand the importance of giving, that it does belong to God, and just the pleasure of being able to give. So getting them to see money as neutral, getting them to see money as something that can be earned, because a lot of times they may have parents who don't have a job. They may not really have the concept that you can actually work to earn money. Helping them to understand the importance of savings for a car or for other goals. For some of my older girls, giving them a reality check. It's amazing how teens think you can work at McDonald's and buy a Mercedes. It doesn't quite work that way. So even showing them, here is what your income will look like on paper on McDonald's, and here is the thing you want to buy. These two numbers do not add up. So we may want to finish high school and get a little bit further education so you can get these things. So those are some of the conversations I have. Also, respecting the kid. I have a college degree, but I'm respectful that not every kid is college bound. So if they're not college bound, let's figure out what they're interested in and let's figure out how to help them make a livable wage from that. So I'm really big on honoring how they are created and their purpose and not trying to impose who I am on them. So those are some of the conversations, a few of the things I do regarding money and my girls.
Love it. All of it. I also love your last note about essentially not everyone is going to go to college. I'm 25 and I'm just now finishing my bachelor's degree, you know, and I'm thankful that I had parents that understood that once I figured out what I was doing and kind of figured out what my skills were, that I would be fine. And I have been fine, you know, so thank you for instilling in them too, as well, that it's okay to take a different path.
Yeah,
and it's okay absolutely. To be, I think the overarching theme, Tanya, is that what you're teaching them is that it is okay to be who God is calling you to be, mm-hmm. period. Period. And so I love your heart for them. And I love your heart for financial coaching. I know specifically your financial coaching business, you like helping women over 40, which you've mentioned. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you help other people too, but I know
do.
You're, yes, but I know that you love mm-hmm. helping women over 40. So this has been an incredible conversation. Where can everyone find you, find out about your business, anything like that, that you would like to share with the audience?
Sure. Just one more plug for foster care.
Go for it.
Thank you. So one thing I want to tell people is there's this assumption that the only way you can help out a child is to have them in your home. And there are so many other ways to help. So if you are an empty nester and you're not sure if you want to have a child live with you, there are programs that help children that are about to age out of foster care. They live someplace else. Some of them are actually in college, but they just want a parent, someone to come home to for the holidays, someone to be their cheerleader when they get a good grade or a bad. And there are programs specifically for children aging out of foster care where you are simply a mentor and they do not live with you. Also, if you don't feel the call to have children in your home, there's several options. You can help out a foster care family. So the church I go to is amazing, and they have a foster care team ministry. So somebody will actually bring us a meal once a week, offer to babysit the kids. Those things are so helpful. When you have multiple foster kids, I feel like I live my life either at court or at a doctor's appointment or at a school appointment. So knowing that once a week there is a meal that I do not have to think about is so helpful. If you have items, please donate children's items, because sometimes you get the call at the last second, hey, there's a baby and you have no baby items. So if there's someone at a church or someplace that can have a place where people can go to for items. So I always tell people to help with foster care, you don't particularly have to have children. So I want to get that out of the way, but my business side.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And then maybe offline, yeah, I can get a couple of the actual, like maybe websites that you're talking about specifically to, being able to support or mentor a foster kid without having them in your home. I would love to put all that in the show notes, but we can get all that offline.
Yes, I would love that. So my business is the Financial X Factor. So it's interesting. I call it the Financial X Factor for a couple of reasons. One, because I want to get a shout out to my Gen X homies, because I do feel we're kind of forgotten. And I want to give hope that your dreams are not dormant. You still can live your dreams. There's still time. There's still hope. You have such a future and a voice. And you're in a season in your life where you've had enough maturity to be just that word of wisdom over someone. But I do talk to all ages. And the X, because I'm passionate about your God-given purpose is undefined. I don't define it. You do. That X factor is that spot where you're living your purpose. And it doesn't really matter what that is. Again, I'll have some women that say, I really want to be a stay-at-home mom, as if that's not beautiful and significant and important and awesome that this person is making this choice to pour her heart into her children and just raising these amazing kingdom kids that's going to go and be able to spread the gospel to other people. Or they want to raise kids that will move and shake the world. To me, that has as much value as the majority of my women who want to start their own businesses. So helping to get their finances in a place to where if they want to pursue their business, they can pursue it. Interesting part about my business is I run into a lot of women who want to downsize. They've gone after the careers, gone after the money, but that's not where their heart is. So it's like, okay, how do we downsize, align your values with your spending, so you are pursuing your purpose? Again, I believe women on fire with their purpose can change the world. And I just feel so honored to be part of their journey.
Yes, love it. Love your heart. Love all that you are doing. You are an incredible person, an incredible woman. And you have so much wisdom and strength and value that you are adding to the world. And to me personally, selfishly, I just love talking to you myself. So I'm glad that you got on the podcast to talk to everyone else. But I'll link everything for Tanya in the show notes so that you can reach out to her. And then I'll also link some places, some websites that we can look at about foster care without maybe actually being a foster parent, but just being a mentor and some of those other things. So I'm excited to do that as well. Tanya, this has been so great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks for tuning into today's episode of the Faith and Finance podcast. If you want to find out more about how I can serve you, you can visit us at faithandfinance.org, or you can visit me at Instagram at faith.in.finance. I'm also on Facebook, but the easiest way to reach me is through my email, adrian@faithandfinance.org. Thank you so much for listening. Keep the faith, my friend.